Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 127, Mystery Physics. Regular listeners will be familiar with Cheap Astronomy's coverage of issues which go along the lines of, hey, wouldn't it be great if this black box of mystery physics worked and then all this stuff could happen? Then Cheap Astronomy comes along and says, well, for example. Dear Cheap Astronomy, is warp drive looking any more possible? Well, no. Insofar as it looks about as possible as it ever did. Which is to say it's probably impossible, but at the same time, it's best to never say never. As we've covered before, the nature of space-time precludes the possibility of faster-than-light travel, simply because light travels as fast as it's possible to travel in space-time. That's not because there's anything special about light. It just so happens that light, being massless, can travel up to and at the universe's speed limit. And anything that does have mass can't do that. But any theorist will tell you that that in itself doesn't rule out the possibility of warp drive, since the whole idea of warp drive is to warp space-time and hence get around the speed limit in that way. There are at least two highly theoretical possibilities to explore here. Firstly, we could create wormholes in space-time. We know that black holes represent very deep gravity wells in space-time, so with a bit of intellectual gymnastics, one can create the possibility that you could connect one such well to another well and hence create a tunnel, which might extend from one point in space-time to another point at a huge distance away, a distance that you could never hope to cross in a lifetime if you were travelling in space-time rather than around it. But again, this is highly theoretical. While it's clear that a black hole can create a very steep gravity well, it's not clear how, or why, such a well should then become a tunnel. And surely the only reason the well is created in the first place is because of the black hole creating such an enormous concentration of mass density. So, entering that well will just send you into the black hole, noting that you and your starship will be spaghettified on the way down. If the wormhole story is correct, the other end of a supposed black hole-generated wormhole is a white hole, where everything pulled into the black hole is ejected back out due to some kind of negative mass and negative energy activity. To date, we've not observed anything like a white hole spewing stuff back out into the universe, and if it did, it would be contrary to most traditional laws and principles of physics and cosmology. And so, until we do observe a white hole, it's best to just keep on calling this highly theoretical thinking. Another option is to appeal to quantum physics, where quanta are the smallest indivisible measurements of things like length, volume, energy, or whatever, and at those quantum levels, there is always a level of uncertainty in those measurements. So nothing is ever really zero, and nothing is ever really a vacuum. Particles and antiparticles appear and then annihilate, such activity being what people sometimes refer to as vacuum energy. And this is where the Casimir effect comes into play. For example, if you put two metal plates very close together, they start being drawn together. Apparently because there's more vacuum energy outside the plates than in the narrow, restricted space between the plates. So, people like to say that between the plates, there's a negative vacuum energy density. And there, supposedly, is that negative physics we need when we're trying to find workarounds to the space-time speed limit. But beyond establishing that general theoretical framework, it's mostly hand-waving about how on Earth we might build a starship to take advantage of that framework. Nearly every speculative article about warp drive refers to Miguel Alcubierre's paper
proposing the generation of a warp bubble within which a starship could move without breaching the space-time speed limit, because it's just that bubble of space-time that's moving through space-time. But why that bubble should persist when it has a massive starship within it is where you start appealing to negative energy, which is not only highly theoretical, but even if it does exist, you'd need an awful lot of it. And there have been alternative solutions to create warp bubbles with positive energy, that is, known energy, but they also require a heck of a lot of it. Something like the mass energy contained within the sun. And that then raises the question of how your starship could maintain its structural integrity in the face of such energy, be it positive or negative. So, once again, warp drive seems highly unlikely, and even if theoretically feasible, may require extraordinarily vast sources of energy to actually drive it, meaning you might not only kill yourself, destroy your starship, and also destroy the star system that you're traveling from and the star system that you're traveling to. And so, even if you could, you'd have to wonder why you'd want to.
This is the middle bit.
And so much for Star Trek. But of course, science communicators' enthusiasm for what-if stories doesn't stop there. There's also room for headline-grabbing claims in more conventional physics, where it seems everyone wants to see a standard model get knocked off its perch. For example,
Dear Cheap Astronomy, what is X17? X17 is a mysterious and somewhat hypothetical particle. Somewhat hypothetical means there is a bit of evidence for its existence, although it's more a case of there being evidence of something unusual rather than definitive evidence of a new particle that does something unusual. This evidence comes from observations of nuclear decay, where you fire a particle beam at a film of lithium-7, briefly forming beryllium-8 nuclei, which then quickly decay by shooting off electron-positron pairs. But it turns out that some of those pairs separate at anomalous angles. Particle interactions are very predictable events, so those anomalous angles need an explanation, and the team who discovered these anomalies proposed that if a particle of 17 mega electron volts had also been produced in the interaction, that could explain the anomaly, and hence that proposed new particle was named X17. When we say it's a new particle, the current proposition is that it's a boson, a force-carrying particle, rather than a hadron, which is a massive material particle, like a proton or a neutron. The X17 boson's effect is to alter the angle of deflection of the ejected electron-positron pairs, so it does seem to apply some kind of force. This is, on the one hand, terribly exciting, insofar as there are only four known forces in the universe: gravity, electromagnetism, and the strong and weak nuclear forces. Those four forces have four associated bosons: the hypothetical graviton for gravity, the photon for electromagnetism, the gluon for the strong nuclear force, and the Z and W bosons for the weak nuclear force. So any new boson beyond that represents a possible fifth force in the universe, which is the usual headline clickbait for any popular science articles about the X17 particle. But while a newly discovered fifth force of nature does sound terribly exciting, that fifth force doesn't apparently do all that much. Its action seems somewhat like the established weak nuclear force, in that it plays some role in nuclear decay. So the X17 boson could be hinting at some extra feature involved in how hadrons are held together, or otherwise how they fall apart, but that does seem to be about it. And we do need to be a bit sceptical here. That same team that found the anomaly in the decay of beryllium-8 has also found a similar anomaly from observations of helium nuclei, but that is two anomalous findings found by the same team. Other teams are talking about some preliminary work towards replicating their experiments, but no definitive success or failure has been reported to date. If it seems surprising that every particle physicist on the planet hasn't suddenly diverted their attention towards discovering a new fifth force of nature, well, that's science for you. Bold claims get made, and they do often fizzle out, and no one else has seen any hint of this brand new boson, despite it allegedly being produced at fairly modest energy collision levels. It's not all that easy to get a big government grant to investigate something that may just turn out to be an experimental glitch. In reality, there's been vastly more written about X-17 in popular science articles than in peer-reviewed science journals. The potential fifth force of nature angle can get you a lot of coverage, although most authors just write a detailed article about the four known forces and leave the reader to ponder what the fifth force might be and what fabulous new physics might be on the horizon as a result, without dwelling on the fact that this alleged fifth force somewhat diverts the deflection angle of some small nuclear decay particles. It's not obviously something you're going to build a warp drive out of. There's also a lot of hand-waving narrative about how this new X-17 finding will lead to a new understanding of dark matter, despite the fact that it's a boson, which doesn't have any mass. The only logic seems to be that since this finding is a bit of a mystery, maybe it will help us understand other mysteries. Well, we'll see.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Science fiction routinely adopts the approach of asking the reader to suspend belief enough so that one extraordinary thing is possible, and from that basis the writer then weaves an entertaining story. Whether that's really what science communicators should be doing is less clear, but some very eminent science communicators certainly do it. And to be fair, it is best to never say never, although focusing on what is currently feasible is perhaps the best approach, although it is human nature to leave some time for storytelling. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want a bedtime story, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll put you to sleep in no time. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.